You are no longer muted.
Well, that's good.
It may not be.
Okay, we'll call to order the June meeting for the Historic Preservation Commission for the town of Curie Beach. So again, we have our agenda. First item on the agenda is the adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion? First of all, before we do that, do we need to acknowledge Tony?
Yeah,
as being on the phone.
As being on the phone?
Yeah,
okay. Good, okay.
All the line.
So we're all here. Excellent. Okay, so anyway, first item is the adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to adopt the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, next item is the adoption of the May 6, 2020 regular meeting minutes. Why don't we just take a minute and look at this and see if there's any recommended changes. Is there a motion to adopt the minutes?
Make a motion to adopt the minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Next item is public comments.
Chairman.
Yes.
I was just looking at the remote policy. We need to make sure the minutes of this meeting reflect the technology that Tony's using, which I guess is a call.
Okay, that's for the current, because Tony was not here.
He didn't call in last
He didn't call in last
I'm not talking about the minutes. I'm inserting a question about remote participation.
Okay, so we need to acknowledge that within
you
the minutes.
You identify, but you also have to identify for the minutes how he's participating.
Okay, so we will identify for the minutes that Tony is calling in remotely and is present for the meeting.
Thank you.
Okay. Hearing nobody online for public or present here, we will then go to agenda item number 5, which is an update on the designation report for downtown Curie Beach Historic Overlay District. Just kind of to start this conversation, I've got two real kind of agenda items. Related to this. One is that I think I mentioned via email that at the last council meeting, I told the council members and the mayor that they would receive an email because we need some ideas and some insights from the council. We don't need it, but it'd be certainly useful to get insights regarding how they view the downtown area and the fact that we need to kind of buff up the foundation components of what we really mean by our ambiance within the district. And as of today, I have received nothing from the council. So that is fine. We certainly gave the council the opportunity, but that is certainly something that I think is one of our primary activities here is to buff that up. And I'm sure we'll get into that conversation later in the meeting with our attorney. The other thing I do want to mention, and it is included in the packet that you have, I also printed it off, are the comments from the state, since these are the things that we should address. Now, we don't, the state's comments, and the state is a advisory role. It's not a required role, so we can ignore these. We can address every single one. We can address the ones we think are appropriate and so forth. But one of the things that I mentioned before, and I did some checking, is that there certainly seems to be a historic building registry orientation by the state. And just as an example, if you go to look at the comments, and they talk about the integrity statements for both the integrity statements that they're recommending. They have a PDF and they have other PDFs right there, the National Register Bulletin 15 PDF. And so anyway, I went to the Cape Lookout Village Historic District PDF, which is on the second to last page of the recommendations. The Arococoke Historic District PDF, went to that. Those are not historic districts. They are National Registry districts. And so they clearly have a historic architectural National Registry orientation in almost all of the recommendations here. And all the resources that they provided that they suggested we look at are National Registry resources and not the historic district under the state rules that we're looking at right here. So I just want to let everybody know that many of the comments, when you look at this, have the orientation of a national building, a national historic registry for building orientation rather than kind of the ambiance and the sort of things that we're looking at. So those are kind of my comments right there. I do have an email from Mr. Eldridge about some of the things that he would like to address tonight. I don't need to read through this. I'm sure you're going to go ahead and go through it. Mr. Eldridge, do you want to kind of jump in? And I think it's going to be kind of a free-for-all meeting, but one of the things that I think we do need to do is go through the recommendations from the state and either say we're going to ignore it or who's going to take responsibility to do things and so forth.
Thank you. Can you, is this on? Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, Chairman, let me take your last point and go from there. The only thing I'm focused on are the revisions, which I think the report needs for reasons that I'll tell you in a few minutes. Therefore, I'm not focused on the rest of, I haven't even focused on the rest of the recommendations at all that are in front of you. I agree that because those recommendations are advisory, in some sense they can be, some of them can probably be dispensed with, others may require implementation, but I think if we just walk through them one by one or by groups, we can make that decision. But getting to the heart of the matter, let me share with you some of the epiphanies that I've had about what I think needs to be done. And my realizations come from several sources. One, trying to digest their comments and recommendations. Two, looking very heavily at the designation reports, which are in a different format because it happened in an earlier time, for Morehead City's Historic District and Beaufort, I guess their city's town of Beaufort Historic District. Another source is the several hours I spent in the Historic District on Monday. And I'll just share with you some of the thoughts that I have. I'm close to being able to rewrite the, let me back up, the revisions that we did make to the report, if you all will recall, were to the first six pages, the background. We didn't touch anything that the intern worked on. Based on what I've seen, based on what I've studied, it's my opinion that, in speaking very generally, that the report itself, the description and the statement of historical significance are conclusionary in the sense that the other reports that I've studied took what was on the ground and wove it into the narrative to reach the conclusion that satisfied the elements under the statute. So, for example, what is it about, when you're walking in that district, what is it about those structures that make it feel like a small town, family friendly? It's one thing to say, hey, we're going to preserve this district because it's a small town. It has an ambience. It has a feeling. It has an association of small town and family friendly. But the challenge is to take the architecture, the physical appearance, and explain what it is about that that takes you to those conclusions. What is it about the structures along 3rd Avenue, for example, that make it family friendly in a small town? My impressions are as follows, and I hope we can flesh this out a little bit. And when I tell you my impression, it is interesting to note how it evolves or how it segues into the guidelines. My initial impressions is I'm not familiar with Curry Beach. My 3 hours in the B1 district is probably the most time I've spent anywhere in this town other than here. Never even been to the pier. I hasten to add, I've been to Carolina Beach Pier quite a bit. That will change, I promise. So it was real interesting for me to be walking around and looking at everything. Even though the Zoom call was great, I almost followed up with you to see if you recorded that. My impression is this. I was struck by how many one-story, I call them one-story hip roof, gable roof bungalows there are in this town, which are in stark contrast to the, I don't know what your shorthand terminology is, but your three-story multifamily typical beach house scenario. My sense is that the small town atmosphere, the family-friendly atmosphere, has a lot to do with the scope and scale of those small buildings. And indeed, I found language like that, albeit focusing on a particular architectural theme, like chimneys or windows or gingerbread. But nonetheless, those Moorhead and Beaufort reports focused on certain physical things to justify or explain or analyze or reach the conclusion of whatever element it was they considered to be historically significant. So my knee-jerk is, it's the scope and scale of those buildings, which you could also use even for some of the non-contributing buildings, which have contributing elements in it. Because all of that lends itself to an earlier time. What's challenging about that is two things. In practically east, west, whatever leg of the boundary you're on, those structures are interspersed with non-contributing structures. I think I can still make the point that the scale and scope and the aesthetics, even though there's no unifying theme there, of these bungalows, nonetheless contribute to the field. But here's an interesting extension of that. And I think really, that's the only way we're going to reach a small town family-friendly thing is to focus on the scope and scale of these earlier buildings. When we get to the design guidelines, if that's the historical significance, how do we perpetuate that? In other words, are we going to limit the scope and size of development on vacant lots or infill lots, or when the old structure comes down and the new structure comes up? Are we limiting everything to one-story bungalow-type property? That's something that you need to think about now, because as Ramona said, and I understand how it works, what you're saying is historically significant is the foundation for your guidelines. So if you say, for example, the small town family-friendly feeling of Curran Beach is based on the scale, limited scale and scope of the one-story 1950-1960 bungalow structures, then you've got to be thinking about how you're going to perpetuate that historical significance, that feeling, and get around to your guidelines, which is going to govern development.
But may I interject?
Absolutely.
With the argument, or could the argument be made that our 35-foot height limit would play into that, keeping that, because we are trying to keep it a residential,
well, let me answer
purposefully residential area, not high rises.
Let me answer the question. Let me answer the question this way. When I walk down Third Avenue, if I've got three-story multi-family residential structures, they're going to overwhelm the scale and scope of the bungalow. I think it's the bungalow. If you allow something up to 35 feet, which is obviously the multi-family three-story structures you have in town right now, I see that as being very inconsistent with the feeling generated by the scale. So let me say what
can I jump in for, you know, I'm going to take kind of an opposite approach. I can appreciate the scale and scope, but I think that there would be a lot of pushback against limiting property owners on a scale and scope component. So I personally don't see it as a scale and scope. We have a 35-foot height limit.
They want to put up a shipping container home.
Yeah, you know, so I see it as more of a design and material component. Well, okay, and let me just finish. For example, if I think about 1940 to 1970s, which is what we're kind of describing this as, you don't really have what I would call modern buildings, okay, you know, represented by all pure glass. You don't have a pure glass building. You could take a pure glass building, let's say, a modern-looking building like our one residential, one a little bit further south, and that, I think, would not fit in with what we're trying to achieve. So scale and scope, I agree, but I don't think that's going to be sold to the town council nor to the property owners if we try to regulate that. I think we have to work within more of a material and design element. At least, but that's my own opinion.
Well, let me respond. May I respond to that? You're talking about two things, skin and architecture.
Right.
Let's take the second one first. One of the challenges to running the architecture is there is no unifying architectural details that are common to all the non-recruiting structures.
That doesn't bother me. That's one of the features. That's the nature of a beach community.
So what is the architectural element that you're identifying?
The architectural element is not allowing other architectural elements. I mean, you have a variety of architectural elements, and you can identify them. But there are certain architectural elements that, you know, so let's say a McDonald's. I mean, you take a classic McDonald's and put it in there. That architectural element is different than what we're trying to achieve downtown. So I think it's any beach community right now, you know, whether it's on the West Coast or East Coast or any places, one of the things that makes it a beach community is the diversity of, you know, components, you know, within that, you know, colors, architectural components, and that sort of thing. But what is significant is not having other elements in it.
I agree with you, but we still need to identify the applicable relevant architectural details, not only for the production of this report, but for the guidelines. So I don't know how to do that. What do you think those architectural details are?
I have written down a couple of things, and I've written down kind of the one-story frontage, not necessarily meaning it had to stay one-story, but that kind of look or feel.
I don't know what one-story frontage is.
Not modern glass, but the welcoming walk-in type frontage with the big headband above it where they've got their sign. I'm thinking more like Freddy's and the arcade and the diner sort of area right there. That's kind of got a style to it. And the walk-in type store frontage is welcoming. It's family friendly. It's not like you've got to go upstairs and elevators and modern features to get to sections of a building. I do think the lack of uniformity is important, but I agree that you can't let that run wild. You can have flexibility within guidelines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had the same thoughts. I said when I look in, because I've always been looking for that one theme that is in there, and our theme down K Avenue is single building businesses, single story. Walk-up businesses, there's outside sitting at a couple of them, and the park. And then you have your cottage-type residence that could be, if they're destroyed, then they're going to be like the row of buildings like the one at the park, right next to the park. That's what they're going to be replaced with. So.
Right next to the park, I'm trying to visualize. If I'm on Atlantic Avenue and the park is on my left,
it's the next one over. They tore down a cottage and put up.
I've got the park. I've got the restrooms.
And then right next to that.
My recollection. Am I at the corner of L? What's between the restroom and the corner of L?
The house and two hotels.
The house and two hotels. But that was a nice little.
Is it all there? Is that what I'm thinking?
No, that's on the.
That's on Fort Fisher.
Fort Fisher, yeah. So.
I agree with you on the commercial, but we're still stuck on the residential.
Well, the residential, like you say, that's what I'm saying. those cottages down Atlantic Avenue, I can't think of their names, but they've been there forever. If families want to get rid of them, I don't see anything we can do. If somebody wants to put in the same type of structure that went in next to the park, it's a three-story or two-story rentable house.
Three, John.
Well, any house is rentable.
Well, I know. You know what I mean, though. More of the multiple bedrooms and not designed more for five bedrooms and for a beach rental type.
One of the things you're doing is you're leaping to the guidelines without defining what is here now that makes it historically significant. So I don't care about, you know, the two or whatever building it was. When did it go in next to the restroom?
A year and a half ago.
Yeah. We're trying to take, we've got a snapshot in time of 1950, 1960, 1970. Our job, particularly with residential, is to define what it is about those physical properties that lends itself to the small town family friendly atmosphere, which is what we have to use when we use the guidelines. I agree, limiting one-story, two-bedroom bungalows is suicide. That's why I brought it up. But the challenge remains, nonetheless, where do we go? And more importantly, it's one thing to say lack of uniformity and the varied and the diversity, but like you say, you can't open it up to that. Therefore, I have to refine it somehow and identify elements
need to
point out the historical
significance. Yeah, no, I understand. And, you know, we're walking a fine line here because if we were in another state, we wouldn't be having this discussion. We could have design guidelines that don't require a historic district. The problem of North Carolina is the only way we can regulate this type of activity, both in the commercial area but particularly in the residential, like in residential units, is by declaring it a historic district. So that's kind of the motivating. I think we all recognize that there's certain things we don't want to happen in the downtown area. And so what we need to do is walk that fine line between satisfying the requirements for a historic district in the state of North Carolina, but still keep our original purpose in place, which is to not allow certain type of things to happen.
I totally agree that you've identified the one and only vehicle for regulatory control in this instance. And I totally agree. Why I'm having this discussion, that we are walking a fine line. Not only do I have to determine the historical significance based on these 1950, 60, 70 structures, but I've also got to deal with the fact that they're interspersed with non-contributing structures throughout. So that's our challenge. And frankly, I find it a difficult challenge. I think I'll get there.
Can I suggest maybe, because I'm going to ask our council representative here as to, I know we have some funding in next year's budget. We've never used funding, I think, but do we have any funding to hire an architect who might be able to walk through? We can give them a charge about what we're trying to do and let an architect, possibly one who works in historic Wilmington, you know, be able to go through and maybe identify, because we're struggling with this. I think everybody's struggling with it here on the commission. Do we have any money that we could hire an architect to help us?
We have money June 30th, July 1st. You need it before then?
Probably not. I think we could.
I'll put $5,000 in my budget just for this.
Did you? Okay. I mean, does that, but let me ask.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I think they would have the skill set to walk around these structures and pick out elements that we can use to develop the significance and more, and lay the foundation for the guidelines to preserve that significance.
Especially if they were charged with, this is what we're trying to do, find those elements for us. That would be money well spent.
I think we're now at a point where it's kind of exceeding the ability of the commission here to be able to put the detail that you're looking for on this without some professional help, I think.
Two more things before you complete your thought. I was really struck by the contributing nature of the structures on the west side of Third Avenue. So then when I took it upon myself to go down Fourth Avenue, I was particularly struck again by the presence of so many contributing structures. And I want you to visualize for a minute, right now your western boundary stops at Third Avenue. Mm-hmm. And you've got, and I'm talking about where the, I guess it's the Lutheran Church, the Puri Memorial Lutheran Church.
Methodist Church.
You got a lot of contributing structures on Third Avenue that aren't in the district because they're on the other side. Just imagine, I'm making a bid here to extend the boundary of Fourth on the western side, because if you didn't regulate and you get your three-story multifamily houses all along Third Avenue, it's going to put huge, it'll take away from the significance of the eastern side of that western boundary. You know, I've walked down Third Avenue heading south, and I've got, oh, look at all these nice little structures. And I turn around, and I've got this wall of multifamily, three-story things. So I'd encourage you all to consider extending the boundary to the west over the Fourth Avenue.
I'm not trying to cut you off, but I'm trying to visualize that, and I'm looking at one side of the street, and I've got one set of rules, and the other side of the street, and I've got the other set of rules, right? Well, if I move Third over to Fourth, I've got the same problem on Fourth.
Yeah, but you capture a tremendous amount of, you do two things. You capture a lot of contributing structures on the eastern side of Fourth Avenue, and you prevent the western side of Third Avenue from overwhelming historic district on the other side of the street.
It almost makes sense to say Third Avenue on both sides of the street, and then what's behind that is on Fourth Avenue on both sides of the street. So the divider is actually between Third and Fourth rather than at the street, right? Because you've got street, lot, street.
Yeah, I got that. I'd encourage you to go down Fourth Avenue again and just look at how many contributing structures are on. The other thing that we can use for the budget, and we absolutely have to have this, we need a good site map.
Right.
I want a map that shows the name of the streets, that shows the boundary, that shows where Atlantic Avenue ends. I want to see the adjacent, not the whole zoning map, but I want to see whatever they shadow in, the underlying zoning district of B1, and then the zoning districts adjacent to it. And I'd like to work with whatever surveyor you've got that's going to do that, so between notes and indications on the map, I can ensure that what we need is on that map. I think that detail will help us, will help the formulation of the guidelines, and will be a good risk management tool to have.
Beth, you said you were going to try to track down a map. Did you ever have any luck?
I was unable to. Bethany, I don't think you found a big district.
But I don't want a pre-existing map. I want a new map of the Curie Beach Historical District. We're probably talking about an expensive. Do you have an idea what it looks like? If I come in on the site for the money, am I looking at $1,000 or $2,000?
I was going to say just for the HPC.
So you're looking at about $1,000 or $2,000 expense. We can take care of the boundary description. That's not a problem, but we need a good map.
What would be the procedure to? I think the starting point is to get an architect first, because I'm still a little concerned by referring to things as what's the term that you were, contributing structures.
The
reason for that is I personally have a real problem of telling a homeowner that they can't build 35 feet. Okay, I mean I think there's going to be a lot of pushback on that. I think what we need to do is say that if it's within the district, that if they build the 35 feet, it has to look in a certain way. You know, I think that's kind of the key thing. So I think we're going to have a lot of pushback by trying to preserve one-story cottages. I mean, that's my own feeling. So that's why I think it's important that we get an architect here and to look at this and see if they can come up with a set of descriptions that might capture what we're really trying to achieve in this area. You know, because I think the council was very specific, and I think the concern of the property owners are very specific that you know, we want to, again, walk that fine line. Again, this is a different fine line, but walk that fine line between the property rights of individual property owners to maximize the benefit of their property and still also maximize the benefit to the town of Kiri Beach, which is to maintain a certain ambiance associated with the downtown district.
I don't disagree, and again, that's why I brought this up, because it's a very fine line. Let me play devil's advocate for you. If you took that historic district and took all those one-story structures and replaced them with three-story multifamily units, you really think that it's going to feel the same like a small town family?
No. But what it would feel is if you don't allow certain materials and you don't allow certain things and you allow people to build the 35 feet, you could enhance the look of that and maintain at least some elements of what we're trying to achieve versus allowing people to do whatever they want to do, which is the way it is right now.
Well, that helps to explain.
But that's my opinion. I don't know what the rest of the commission.
One thing before we turn it over to the discussion. Be careful about skin. And you and I ran into a lot of emphasis on historical skin with the state people we were dealing with. One of the things that I found helpful in the Moorhead and Mofford study, they got around, and we're talking early 20th, late 19th century structures in those districts. They dealt with the multiplicity of skin types by referencing that they were inevitable because of the maritime environment and the impact of storms. That's a very helpful thing. That's a helpful distinction to make when that's the reality on the ground. You've got that same issue here. So I don't know how much you want to focus on skin when the reality is we have different skins because of where we're located.
If I can, before you open it up to the commission, Joseph, do you have any comments? I know you've been a big supporter of this process and the representative on the council. I mean, you've heard kind of the discussion here. What is your take from your perspective and perhaps council's perspective about what we're trying to achieve? And then I'll ask John about the procedure of actually going out and contracting with an architect.
I think you're right. It would be more of we can have the conversation with the property owner about what can go there, not what they cannot do there. You know, to make it the look and feel for what we want it to be, not you can't do this, you can't do that, but you can do this within these guidelines to limit it from that's addressing. But that's something you can tell people what they can and cannot do unilaterally. But I think we can definitely offer suggestions, and that's what I'm hoping that comes out of this.
In the regulatory scheme that we're considering here, results in a set of guidelines that have to be complied with respect to any exterior change, development, demolition, whatever, to the exterior appearance of structures and utilities within the district. And in order to get that certificate of appropriateness based on those guidelines, they got to come in and prove their case. So you are telling people what they can and cannot do with those guidelines.
Yeah, you're right. And that's what council is going to say. We can't tell people what to do, but really, in effect, yeah, we do every day. We tell people what they can and can't do. Or we can build a storage container home, which is still ridiculous, in my opinion. you know, because we told people what they can and can't do, and I'll use that argument. I'm sure they'll come up if we make this on council.
Just wanted to make sure that you...
Yeah, I personally think that as long as we allow people to get benefit out of their property, I don't, you know, I think that's going to be the major issue. If we tell them that if they're within the historic district that, yes, you have to get a certificate of appropriateness, there are some design guidelines. Those design guidelines can have a fair amount of leeway in them in terms of materials and so forth. You know, also design guidelines, if it's a complete knockdown and reconstruction, we'd probably have to go before a Historic Preservation Commission to be able to get the COA, but if it's, you know, minor sort of renovations, that can be just through John's office providing that COA. It doesn't have to go to the Historic Preservation. But I think trying to keep that ambiance is kind of the key thing. Now, defining the ambiance is the hard part, and I think that's where we need to maybe get help of a professional architect to see if they can help us define it in a way that would allow people to use their property as I think the council would like to see, but also maintain the ambience that we're trying to achieve, because there's going to be a lot of development pressures in this community over the next couple of years. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And you know, this is the proper time to look at this issue.
I'm not an architect and I'm not a cultural resource person. I can write this report, but I need the stuff to write it with. So I think the architect is a great idea. I don't have any problem with the policy of what you want to do with this district, you know, what you're going to allow, what you're not going to allow. That doesn't matter to me. I simply came in here saying that we're conclusionary. We need to be able to point to something to make it, to advance to those conclusions, and I think your suggestion for an architect is good. The other thing I want to say is, and Andy may know this, when you hire an architect, you got to jump through very specific procurement requirements unless the cost of that architect is going to be below whatever it is, $30,000 or $50,000, which is obviously the case. In that instance, the Minnie Brooks General Statute, that's the nickname, allows the Board of Commissioners, allows the Council to exempt that hire from those procurement requirements, which are basically RFQs, RFPs. And it's a simple resolution. You don't need any documents. I can do that resolution if council desires. It's very simple. So in other words, I would have staff make some informal inquiries as to what it might cost, get some names. You don't have to solicit bids. Just get some informal quotes with contact information and the name of the company. And if we find one that fits and council wants me to draft the Minnie Brooks exemption resolution, that's a no-brainer.
Okay. Let's turn it open to Commissioner.
I do have a comment here, and I think this is important before we hire the architectural consultant. The discussion about the map boundaries and drawing the map is critical, because if we don't do that before we hire an architect, we could be missing or including the wrong elements from that discussion. So I agree that we've got to do the architectural consultant. I think that's an excellent idea, but I think we have to really sit down and decide that 3rd, 4th Street boundary, where that is, and have this map drawn out either, at least concurrently with that.
I think that 3rd or 4th Street boundary issue will be resolved very quickly, depending on whether or not the recommendation is made to council and or if it is made to council. I don't see that as a lingering issue.
The one thing, when you were saying good, are you talking about overlaying the B1 District 1 block up for both sides?
Taking that western line of the current proposed historic district boundary and moving one block to the west.
On the other side of that coin, we could simply say, here's what we're proposing, architect. Take a look at the immediate boundaries and see if anything qualifies to let him expand it.
Well, look, One thing about moving it to 4th Street, if you're not wedded to the concept of preserving the structural presence that's there, in other words, it's mostly one story, then don't worry about it. I mean, if you're going to allow something more than the bungalows that are there, then it's not necessarily, you don't necessarily have to go to 4th Street.
I don't think preserving a bungalow will ever fly with property values and everything else. People are going to want their 35-foot buildings, but I do think we can not control, but guide that process as to what they build as a 35-foot building.
I should point out that the council specified the B1 district. Okay, when we started this process, I presented it to the town council. We were having this discussion ahead of time. I remember. Yeah, larger, smaller, and all that sort of thing. The town council, I'm not sure if it was a vote, but they certainly strongly recommended that we limit ourselves to the B1 district.
My comments were simply based on my original.
Right.
But if the architecture comes back and says, maybe we need to expand it, but you got some background then to make it happen.
Yeah, and I think that the council would be receptive if we don't limit the ability of property owners to too much, that they probably would be receptive to maybe expanding it a block or something like that.
There could also be the argument, because you know Americans are the South, as the beach area becomes overdeveloped, which it already is, those bungalows could become a rarity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you could argue that either way.
I think about your story, Christian.
So what is, John, what would be the best way? It sounds like our starting point really is to try to get a architect who's familiar with some historic things. You know, people maybe work in historic downtown Wilmington, an architect or something like that. What would be your recommendation to?
I've got a couple in mind right now. But
do you?
I mean, obviously, you could just send out a press release on it and probably have several applicants.
Do you have to do a full-blown RFP, or you could just...
Not if you do the Minnie Brooks exemption that I would reference.
Oh, okay.
So that would just be perhaps John just calling a couple of these people and saying, would you be interested in doing this, and finding out their quote? And if we're within the budget that we're talking about...
Get two or three quotes for what we need them to do.
You know, without... So we don't really need to do a press release or an RFP or anything then on that.
Again, by statute, hire an architect, you have to go through the procurement statutes, which requires informal bids and an RFP, unless the cost of that architect is less than 30. Then you can paper chase exempt it with a simple one-page resolution and hire that guy.
So,
I would think a press release would be nice, because then you could bring him in and schedule interviews, and you're not bound to any one of them. You just pick out the one you like the best.
Okay. Who should I write the press release? Do you want to write the press release?
You should write
the press release.
John, can we do this in 1 month? Can we do this for the next meeting, or it would take longer?
I don't think so.
Council,
how many responses we get?
Okay.
All right. So I can work, and again, we should probably have a, if it's okay with the commission, why don't you and I sit down sometime in the next couple of days and you can help me with a press release and what I should have in it and stuff like that. Or,
well, I mean, you already know what you want.
No, I could probably write it, but I have no idea where it would need to be published or whatever.
I would send it down on our listserv and call it a day is what I would do.
Okay, so why don't I write something? You know, I'll do a first cut, maybe send it to you, and you could clean it up or something. Okay, all right.
So here's what I suggest. Once you go through that process of identify an architect by name of his entity and contact information and the price, let me know and I'll draft that Minnie Brooks exemption. Again, it takes an hour. And then you'll be ready to go to council with your recommendation and your exemption.
We have a council meeting. When's the deadline to get something on the agenda for the council next council meeting? A week from today.
When does council meet?
The 15th.
And they meet monthly? I don't know that you meet, but I'm about 15.
We meet about every 4 days right now.
Oh, yeah. But the next one would be July 20th.
Just very quickly, when I come to council meetings, I always see on consent agendas, you know, $2,000 for this person, $1,000 for that consultant, things like that. Are those separate resolutions for each one of those, or just an approval?
The Minnie Brooks exemptions are for architects, surveyors, and engineers.
Okay, so that's a different category than the other things I see. Okay, okay. All right, well, then we may end up pushing this off a month. But what I'll do is I'll try to do something tomorrow and get it out there on your listserv and stuff like that, and we may be able to get something by next Wednesday. Most likely not, but we'll give it a shot if that's okay with the commission. So do I have the approval of the commission to, I don't think we need a vote for this, but just a consensus about this is the way we want to go?
Right. I agree.
Fine with me.
Fine
okay.
with me.
Okay.
Tony?
Tony, are you still there?
Yes, I am. I'm good.
Okay. All right. So we'll go ahead and do that.
I hope you all, to me, that was a very useful conversation.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And again, I think that's going to be far more important than going through item by item all the things in here right now. So if that's okay, let's go back to the agenda. Is there anything more on agenda item 5 that we need to talk about as a commission on the designation report, or are we good until our next meeting?
Are we going to leave their suggestion to change the title?
Yeah, what do you think about that? The suggestion is they suggested Curie Beach Local Historic District or the Downtown Curie Beach Local Historic District. Do we want to address that issue now?
What do we call it?
I think we just call it the Curie Beach Historic District.
Historic Overlay District.
That's overlay right. District, yeah. Curie Beach Overlay.
No, we've got a problem. Downtown Curie Beach Historic Overlay District.
I think
you can get rid of downtown and just call it Curie Beach Historic Overlay District.
They're recommending downtown.
They recommend putting downtown in it.
Well, you all come up with what you want.
Well, how about if we wait until we hear the architect, you know, we talk about the boundaries and stuff like that until we do
it. I know it's a historic district by definition of what we're doing, but what we're trying to do is preserve character. Would it not make sense to call it the Curie Beach Character Preservation District or something along those lines?
I would suggest that you ought to stick to the terminology of the statute.
Okay.
I think what we're doing...
Just thinking out loud, but...
Craig, may look at their letter. You're just taking out the word overlay.
Maybe we can have that conversation next time with that, if that's okay.
Okay, I would drop the word downtown if it was that. Just call it the Curie Beach Historic District. Keep it short and sweet.
Okay, so do we want to make that, do we want to vote on that and make that the term right now? Just call it the Curie Beach Historic District?
Hold on the naming of it.
Hmm?
Get the architect on the okay. Yeah. Decide what we want to name once we find out what we actually got.
Okay. Anything else on agenda item number 5? Any new business? Agenda item number 6?
I think for the record, the new business is the discussion of hiring an architect.
Okay.
Right. I don't think we need to discuss that any further.
All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Very good.
Appreciate your patience. Thank you.
Okay, and we will segue right.